Let us pray, O Heavenly Father,
O Heavenly Father,
Divine Mother,
Divine Mother,
Beloved Jesus Christ,
Beloved Jesus Christ,
Blessed Master,
Blessed Master,
Dearest Mother,
Dearest Mother,
Saints and Sages of all religions,
Saints and Sages of all religions,
I bow to all of you. Free my life from all obstacles.
Free my life from all obstacles.
And give me physical, mental, and spiritual development.
And give me physical, mental, and spiritual development.
Make my mind thy temple.
Make my mind thy temple.
Make my heart thy altar.
Make my heart thy altar.
Make my love thy home.
Make my love thy home.
Be thou the only king.
Be thou the only king.
Reigning on the throne of my consciousness.
Reigning on the throne of my
Amen. It's lovely to be here this morning. It seems like a very long time. Reading from, posting from today, Mother's Day. What a perfect idea to honor mothers everywhere. As Mother said, every mother goes through pain and sometimes into the very jaws of death to bring forth every child which she bears. This was true of my own mother. God gave me an experience of being in my mother's womb. I heard my mother's heartbeat. I was so perfectly comfortable being where I was. And I knew that life on earth would not be an easy one. I felt resistance to leaving that haven of peace in the womb. As I listened to that heartbeat, it was such a complete experience that while going through it, my own physical body was curled up in a fetal position. I talked with my mother after this inner experience about my birth. She said that I was breached, and the doctor was up to his elbows getting me turned. She had tears from this that needed to be sutured. My Aunt Kay came to help her for some weeks after the birth, as my mother could not move easily. She had my two older brothers to care for as well as a new baby. Every mother faces the possibility of the unknown and shows great courage in bringing forth new life. When we really think about it, new life is absolutely a miracle, and no new life is possible without a mother. Today we salute our mothers, and if we feel gratitude not only for my own mother, but all mothers, for they made a decision for life, and life is a miracle. Since I not only have a physical mother, without whom I would not have this incarnation, I also have my spiritual mother, without whom I would not have a life worth living. Plato compared himself with a midwife, helping to bring forward a new being, spiritually born. Guru takes it further. The Guru delivers spiritual Shakti, or power of the Divine Mother, and so is an essential part of the Christ or Krishna child taking birth in the aspirant. Then Guru shepherds the soul through all the experiences the soul must go through in order to know God. Babaji described how he watched over the soul of Lahiri Mahashay. When he left the body in a previous incarnation, moved with him in spirit as he spent a life in the astral, then kept him under a protective wing when he was just a little tyke, buried under the sands in lotus posture, and then growing into manhood. How lovingly he was with his beloved disciple, watching, protecting, and secretly guiding him until it was ordained that they should meet again in the physical. Mother, willing to expend herself completely, entered the jaws of death to help bring about the total restoration of God consciousness to all whom God had given her. I know that even when we are not aware, she watches over us, helping us to overcome our karma and to know the infinite. Motherhood requires patience from the zygote, fetus, newborn, and a graceless teen, and all the in-between stages will not appear like a finished product. Not at all. Yet the Guru never ceases to see the perfect soul in God that each one of us truly are. Oh, such patience, a forbearance that only God can display. I bow to you, my Blessed Mother. May your grace lift us up, guide us through the great transformation, that we may merge into God and God into us. Inspire us Inspire us to be what we should be in God and know the perfect freedom of spirit, to be immersed in the bliss you experience and the supreme wisdom you know. For all mothers, have a blessed Mother's Day. There's this beautiful picture of Mother and little baby Nicole at the time. So, such a beautiful picture. Mother of us all is the caption. We have been working on some writings of mothers, transcriptions, and one of the books will be Mother's Meetings with Saints, and there's wonderful stories here. And here Mother tells a story. I will never forget one great mother that I met in India. I don't remember her name now, but she worshipped the Mother Kali. She would go into a state of trance, and whoever asked her a question, she would seem to be able to give them the truth. And so one evening, I was there, I was sitting on the floor, and the interpreter asked me if I had any questions. I said no, I did not. And he kept asking me, and I said, I have no questions. He became angry with me, and he thought surely I had a question. And finally, she said to him, and somebody translated, the mother has no need to ask questions. She already has her God realization. So after the meeting was over, he came up to me, and he said, do you feel God in this temple? I said, no, I don't. And he glared at me, and he said, you have the ability to travel astrally. Why don't you travel to all the Kali temples in India? I said, I have no desire to travel astrally, none whatsoever. So anyway, he finally gave it up in disgust and sat down. Later on, the mother picked, after she came out of the state of trance, she went over to the altar and she picked up a beautiful flower and brought it over and presented it to me. And as she stood there before me, I was sitting on the floor. I felt the power of God in her body so greatly that I can't begin to tell you. It was just overwhelming. While I found nothing in the outer temple, in this body that stood before me, there he was. And so I said to the interpreter that was with us, tell the mother that although I did not feel God in this outer temple, that in the one that stands before me, I feel God very greatly indeed. And her whole face lit up in the most beatific smile. And she took me into her arms, and she just hugged me. Now, this was not done out of a sense of ego, but it was, in a way, God recognizing God. And she was glad that I had recognized that He was the living presence within her. She was a tremendous soul, tremendous. I went to see her twice, and she kept begging me to come back. And if she is still alive, I hope to see her again. Isn't that a wonderful story? And I thought I'd read one other. This is about Mother Krishnabai. I'd like to tell you a story about Mother Krishnabai and Papa's ashram. So one day, there was a poor man who came to the house. And he asked to see Mother because he had heard how charitable she was. And he said, Mother, I am in a very bad strait. He said, I have no job. And he said, my wife and my children and I are starving to death. So I come to throw myself on your mercy. What can you do for me? You must help me. So Mother stood there for a moment and thought. And she said, well, how would you like it if you had a milk cow? And then you could get milk from the cow, you could sell the milk, and you could have money with which to support your family. Oh, he thought, this is wonderful. But he said, Mother, this house where we live, he said, is on a plot of ground belonging to someone else, and there is no other buildings on it. So we have no place to put the cow. Well, we'll arrange for that, she said. We will have some of the workers put up a shelter for the cow. And he said, But having no money, Mother, he said, I have no money to buy food, no hay, nor oil cakes for the cow. Well, she said, we have plenty of hay here. And she said, we'll arrange with the man from whom we get our oil cakes to supply you with some. So everything was fine, everything was arranged, and he took the cow away. But a few days later, he came back, and his face was all disgruntled, and he looked at her, and she said to him, Well, what is your problem? And he said, Mother, he said, no matter how much milk I get from the cow, I cannot sell it because, he said, there are other merchants who are selling milk, and they sell it cheaper than I can. So I have the milk on my hands, and I still can't support my family. You must help me. So the mother said, Well, why do you concern yourself? She said, We have great need for milk here in the ashram. So we'll buy the milk from your cow and furnish us. Now, here she had gone the complete circuit, and the man went away happy. This is truly Christ giving, Christ living. Yet I remember when some people came and asked for a cow at the ashram. After having been given the cow, they refused to sit down and take coffee with Mother because she didn't happen to be one of their religion. It seems unbelievable, yet such it was. It's a wonderful thing that we celebrate this day set aside for mothers, because the heart of the mother is so great. When children are born to the mother, they feel a special bond with that child. And through the love and the giving and the nourishing that comes from the mother, that child flourishes if all things are what they should be. And it is essential that we get those first years of all of that love and nurturance. When I came into this world, I felt for a very long time that I'd been born into the wrong family. And it is not because my family was ungracious or did not do what was necessary in order for me to be able to live in this world. I had many advantages. What I did not have, and I did not realize until later, I was comparing my life here on earth with the life that I had before I came on this earth. And I felt that I was missing the love and the understanding that came from deeply spiritually attuned souls. And so it wasn't until I had that vivid memory of what my life was like before I came here that I realized I was comparing my earthly family with that previous family that I had been born into. And so in my mind, it didn't measure up, and I felt lonely for that previous family. But God keeps it this way. He makes us so that this life is ultimately incomplete. And it is not to torture us. It is to remind us that God is our true source of happiness. He is the lasting happiness. And without that, we will never have the completeness, the fullness. Even if we are to arrange all of life into a particular pattern that was perfectly satisfying to us, it gets disruptive. People become ill, people die, change happens. It's inevitable. And as a result of that, we are left hanging, so as it seems. If we do not turn to God, then we simply feel sorry for ourselves. We can go into a deep state of depression. And this is also by design, because until we remember God, we go into greater and greater suffering. Papa used to say that the world is God, and that everything in the world is perfect. But we look out at this world, and we don't see it that way. We see the imperfections of this world. We see the problems of this world. We see the things that either we or others don't have in this world. And therefore, we cast aspersions onto God. that he is not fulfilling his part, and maybe there isn't a God at all, because how could a loving God allow these things to happen? In India, they worship the mother Kali, as Mother was talking about with the one mother. And Kali is a fierce kind of image. She has a tongue hanging down that's dripping in blood. She's got skulls hanging around her as a necklace. Not exactly your cuddly grandmother. And so she's tough. And when you face her, you see all of these things that don't look lovely at all. Ramakrishna was a great worshiper of Mother Kali. And he faced her. And he faced her fierceness. Now, symbolically, this represents the world. And when we look out on this world and we see wars, we see deprivations, we see people being tortured or abused in some way, this is Mother Kali's outward expression. This is the blood dripping from her tongue. These are the skulls hanging around her necklace. And she's got a sword in one hand. And this is facing that outward symbology, that this world is a tough place. It's a kind of boot camp that we enter into. And then Ramakrishna went further. He wasn't just satisfied with the outer image. He worshipped the Mother Kali. He focused and meditated upon her. And at some point, he broke through that outer facade of fierceness. And then the inner Divine Mother was revealed to him. And she was so beautiful. And he became captivated with her beauty, even though it wasn't of this physical world, it was spiritual. Nevertheless, it was a form. And a great saint came and to him and by the name of Totapuri. And he was a wandering sadhu. And normally he didn't spend any more than 3 days at any one location. And he ended up spending months and months at Dakshineshwar, where Ramakrishna was. And Ramakrishna would tell Totapuri about the Divine Mother and how the Divine Mother has become all of this universe. And Totapuri would say, you have to go beyond form. You have to go into the formless, the absolute. And so he was bound and determined to help Ramakrishna to get there. So he asked Ramakrishna to sit down, and they were facing each other in a little hut. And he said, all right, focus on the point between your eyebrows, the ajna, and think of nothing but the absolute nature of God. And Ramakrishna would sit, and he would look, and he goes, oh, the Divine Mother, she is so beautiful. Totapuri would become enraged. No, nothing of the sort. Go beyond the Divine Mother. Break that image. So Ramakrishna, with new determination, would sit, and he would focus on that point. And suddenly he would see the Divine Mother. Oh, the Divine Mother, you are so beautiful. And so Totapuri would say, no, that won't do. And he looked around, and he saw that there was a piece of broken glass on the floor. And he picked up that broken glass, and he pushed it into the ajna. And he said, I said, focus there. And instantly, Ramakrishna went beyond form. And he went into the formless, and for 7 days he was in this high state of samadhi, beyond all form. Now, the story doesn't end there, because Totapuri also had something to learn from Ramakrishna. And when Ramakrishna went into this high state of samadhi, he said, my God, this man did in a short amount of time what it took me over 20 years of deeply meditating upon the Absolute. And at some point, Totapuri became sick. And as a result, he was in a great deal of pain. And he thought to himself one night, why should I be continuing to carry this body? I fulfilled the purpose that it came for. I have realized God as the Absolute. And so he decided to do away with his life. And he started walking out into the Ganges. And as he walked out into the Ganges, he walked further and further and further with the intent of drowning himself. And he got halfway out into the Ganges and suddenly became aware he was not being submersed in the water. In fact, he is walking on water. And so he turned around and he saw Dakshineswar, the temple there where Ramakrishna lived. And suddenly it transformed for him. And he saw that the entire world was an expression of the Divine Mother. He saw that God was not only in the Supreme Absolute beyond name and form, but that it was also an expression of this earthly life and all the forms. And where before he had struggled to get beyond this earthly life and the allures of this life, now he saw it transformed into something absolutely beautiful as the Divine Mother. And he walked back to Dakshineswar. And as the morning came and the sun came up, he finally took leave of Ramakrishna. And he told him the experience that he had. And that Ramakrishna had helped to take him to the next step, even as he had helped Ramakrishna go to his next step. Isn't that beautiful how these saints can help one another and go to the next higher realm? Divine Mother is the expression as this entire creation, this entire universe. You know, scientists have come up with theories about the Big Bang and how this all this world has come into expression. And then there has been these just random incidents, according to them, that have resulted in the earth taking formation and all of the life somehow coming into formation. And there have been other mathematical scientists who have calculated, if it were just randomness, how long would it take in order for life to evolve in the way that it has. And what they have calculated is that we have not existed nearly long enough. Even though it's in the billions of years, we have not existed nearly long enough to be explained by random chance. That there's some ultimate design, there's an intelligence, so that if you are in need of a liver, speaking evolutionary-wise, that a liver then is manufactured. It's just not that cells accidentally reproduce in a new way and form a liver. And when you think about it, it has to be that way. You think about the beauty, the intelligence of the design of this human body, of nature as it exists today. Now, there's an impersonal aspect to it. Nature can wipe out whole populations at different times. It can go on a rampage. It can storm. It can blow tremendous winds. And sometimes, perhaps this is because man lives out of tune, out of nature, with nature. But nature has this volatility to it. And so there is an impersonal side to it. But there has to be also this personal side. When you think of God as creating mankind, first of all, you have to appreciate that God has a bit of a sense of humor. And secondly, that God has to be have within him this sense of individuality, the sense of I, the sense of the way that we think, the way that we perceive. It all has to be within God in order for it to be expressed in the outer nature. And so God is both personal and impersonal. And it's lovely when you begin to see God. Now, in the beginning, I didn't have any sense of the personal nature of God in the sense of him having a form. Mother sometimes talks about how playfully she thought of God being an old man with a beard, and she would cover him with smooches and tug on his beard. And that was not part of my way of thinking about things. My first experience with God was that he lifted a great burden from me and that he was a living presence inside of me. And this is the way that I related to God. But over time, I began to appreciate more and more the personal aspect. You read the sacred stories from around the world, and whether it's the Ramayana or the Mahabharata or the stories of Jesus, they all are inspiring. They are all relating the personal way that God relates to us. And so I took on a greater appreciation for this, that God is not just purely impersonal, but God has also expressed himself as this entire creation. And it's wonderful, it's beautiful, when you begin to see this world this way. I remember walking down the street one time. It was an avenue that had trees growing up in the center. It was a beautiful little walk. It was a perfect day. And suddenly I saw this world transform, as it were, into pure spirit. I saw and I felt the radiance of God in everything that I was looking at. And it was as if it were a magic kingdom. And it transformed before my very eyes. Now, as you purify heart, mind, and soul, you start to see God in everything and everywhere. And even those fierce aspects. There is a teacher, Ram Dass, Richard Alpert is his other name. And he had a stroke. And he gave a talk one time, and he called it Fierce Grace. And the stroke was this fierce grace in his life. But he saw the good behind it. He saw how it was helping him to evolve. And when we are able to see all incidents in our life as there to help us, to help us to transform, even those things that appear to be out of harmony with perfect truth, with perfect life, that too is here for a purpose. The purpose may be to remind us that this world will never be perfect, so not to wed ourselves too closely to it, to feel that we are always in touch with the Divine Mother that is beyond form, that is eternally perfect and pure and beautiful. And yet we are immersed in this world of imperfection, where there are forms, there are words, there are actions that are definitely out of harmony with highest truth. And yet they too emanate from the Supreme Creator. And therefore, they too are here to help lift us and transform us. The very things that plague us in life, the very things that come as terrific challenges, the very things that can break our hearts, are the very things that God has sent to us to help us to transform. And once we accept that, instead of fighting with it, and know that it is God who is operating through the fierce act, through the fierce face of the Divine Mother as Kali, that fierceness, then we get a new attitude about this life. And for one thing, we are no longer afraid of what may happen. If it is all God, then where is the fear? There can be no fear with that. It is simply allowing God to unfold his life. And you may say, well, that's fatalism, and I don't want to just give in to the idea that bad things can happen. But you have to acknowledge that that's God inside of you, who's wanting to perfect and better this world through you. Now, sometimes people are just in a rage about things, but they are not really constructive about what they do. So we go inside and we ask God, what should I do about this situation? Is there a role for me? Now, it may be that God will just simply have you think and pray about a certain situation. And through that, he will use you as his instrument in order to change something. Sometimes you may take action. I remember one time when we were meeting at the Congregational Church. We came out of service and everyone was uplifted. And there was a scene going on the other side of the street. And it was what I took to be a husband and wife. And they were having an argument. And they were getting out of their car, walking into the house. And so I was watching this unfold. And the man was very angry. And he started to raise his hand as if he might hit her. And so I walked quickly across the street and I shouted, "May I help you?" And it stopped him in that moment. And he looked around and he said, "What?" And I said, "May I help you?" He said, no, we're all right. And he lowered his hand and they started walking into the house. I don't know what happened once they were in their house. But at least in that moment, God had to take action. There is no choice about it. And so sometimes you step in where angels fear to tread. And then other times, God has you step back. Because it's not the right thing to step in and help in that particular moment. Sometimes people need to go through certain experiences. And that can be just as hard to surrender to as stepping in where you have some trepidation of going to. So you surrender to God. Whatever it is that He prompts you, whatever it is that He wishes for you to do. And you don't act out of fear, you don't act out of anger. Now there can be righteous anger at times, and you step in and you can raise your voice. But one thing about it, if you are just simply angry, you will always speak an untruth. But if you are aligned with God and righteous anger, then you will always speak the truth and only what God prompts you to say. You will not step over a line. You will not go too far. You will not think back, "Oh, I shouldn't have said that. That was too much." You are in perfect control. You are perfect master of yourself. And anger does not get the betterment of you. One time I was talking with Mother and she said, "When you swear," she didn't say "if you swear," she said, "when you swear, say, 'God bless it,' because then you're asking God to bless it." I said, "All right, Mother," and it took me some time to bring my mind around so that that was what would come out of my mouth. But I said at the time, I said, "But Mother, when you say it, you mean it." And she said, "Not always." So, you know, she was like that. She was so human. And she understood us as human beings. If you ask her how she was doing, she'd tell you exactly how she was doing. And sometimes it was uncomfortable because she wasn't doing so well. She was having a hard time in the body. She was having difficulties of various things. But she would tell you the truth. And one time she asked a small child some question, and the child went into some great detail, and then she looked around, she said, "Well, I asked." So she was going to have to hear the whole story. So if you ask somebody how they're doing, or somebody asks you, you can tell them. But listen to God inside of you. God has the answers. I think it was Lari Mahasha, or maybe it was Sri Yukteswar, who said that even though man seems to have an infinite way of getting into trouble, God is no less resourceful and will get us out of trouble. So never feel like you're outside of God's purview or that you've done something that is unforgivable. Forgiveness begins with us. We forgive ourselves. We forgive others. We have been thrown into this world. And it's a little bit like the fierce father who throws the child into the water and says, "Now learn to swim. And you better learn to swim quick." And we get thrown into this world. And we're sometimes overwhelmed with it. And sometimes we don't like it very much. But again, this comes as a reminder to turn toward God. This is a great, great thing, you know. When people get depressed, when they feel helpless, if they would only turn to God in their distress, in what doesn't seem to be working for them, and they would break the cycle. There's something called in family therapy. There's a certain kind of cycle that happens within a family that gets stuck, and it just goes around in the same kind of routine. And so I was talking to one of the best family therapists, and he was telling me that you've been working with a family, and the family said, we have this problem teenager, and we want you to see him. And he said, fine, I'll see him as long as all the family comes. Well, we weren't thinking about all of us coming. We just wanted you to fix him. He said, no, you have to all come. Well, we're not sure about that. And he says, and you need to bring your dog, too. And finally, they got the point. They said, all right, we'll come. You break the cycle by expanding the circle, by getting yourself out of a routine. So you have certain things that plague you, certain habits that are difficult for you. And then you start to think badly of yourself. And you think, oh, I'm so weak, or I can't do this, or I've tried so many times, and it's all me, me, me. But you break that by expanding the circle, by including God. And you say, God, you are now my partner in this, and you have to show me the way. You have to help me with this. And in that moment, you've changed the dynamic. It's no longer just cycling around inside of yourself, having a pity party of one. You are now expanded. You are now more. And as a result of that, the pattern will change. It has to. And as long as you keep opening yourself to God, don't go back to the old venue. Don't go back to the old way of doing things, of just feeling bad and ashamed and wanting to hide things. I one time was thinking to myself, I need to live my life as if everything that I think, do, and say ends up on the headlines of the newspaper. Because it makes a difference when people do things that they know are not in concert with truth and with God. They like to think that they can do it in secret. But the Galilean master said, what you think you do in secret shall be shouted from the rooftops. So if we think that way, there's nothing that I can do that's in secret. Everything's out in the open. Sri Yukteswar said that in the astral worlds, that when a person you meet, you see everything about them through the light that is in them. If there's a darkness there, you see it. And we can see that here in the physical world too. We can see it with our eyes. We can see it with our feelings. We meet somebody and it feels like they have a dark cloud around them. And it may be a dark cloud of depression. It may be that they live a life of not being open, and you feel it, you get it. And as your intuition increases, you just sense there's something off about this person. And so there's no hiding anything. There's no hiding anything. And so to live your life, it doesn't mean you have to go around broadcasting everything that you think, say, and do. But you feel that it's an open secret, that everyone may be come into contact with, may be privy to what this is. And that in truth you can do no thing in secret. Everything shall be shouted from the rooftops. And if we lived our lives that way, there would be many things in retrospect that we would not choose to do. Because it would not feel right. We would not want that to be broadcasted all about. But we have all lived a life that is short of perfection. And if that were required in order to know God, then no one would know God. You look at the lives of many of the greatest saints, and they didn't live a life of a saint in the beginning, most of them. You look at the life of Valmiki, who ended up writing the Ramayana. And he was a murderer and a thug and a thief. He was really a bad guy. And yet, when he got turned toward God, he started chanting the name of God. And as a result of that, he went through a complete purification. And that resulted in being one of the greats. And so with that, we can know that no one is beyond redemption. If we start to hold ourselves up as if we are nothing, and God is everything. There's a certain truth to this. But if we get focused on that we are nothing, or that we are terrible, or that we are garbage, that becomes a thought creation. And that thought creation puts a difference between ourselves and God, puts a wall there. Now, we have built that wall brick by brick with our own thoughts, with our own energy. And therefore, we have to replace that. To worship the Divine Mother is a wonderful thing. I wanted to read you this song. It occurred with Ramakrishna, Vivekananda, and Master Mahasaya were spending the night with Ramakrishna, and they were laying down. Master had his own bed, and then they put down some mattresses on the floor. And then the Master asked Narendra, and Narendra became eventually Swami Vivekananda, to sing the song beginning with the line, "In wisdom's firmament, the moon of love is rising full." Narendra sang, and the other devotees played the drums and cymbals. "In wisdom's firmament, the moon of love is rising full, and love's full tide in surging waves is flowing everywhere. O Lord, how full of bliss thou art, victory unto thee. On every side shines devotees like stars around the moon. Their friend, the Lord All-Merciful, joyously plays with them. Behold, the gates of paradise today are open wide. The soft spring of wind of the new day raises fresh waves of joy. Gently it carries to the earth the fragrance of God's love. Till all the yogis, drunk with bliss, are lost in ecstasy. Upon the sea of the world unfolds the lotus of the new day. And there the mother sits enshrined in blissful majesty. See how the bees are mad with joy, sipping the nectar there. Behold the mother's radiant face, which so enchants the heart and captivates the universe. About her lotus feet, bands of ecstatic holy men are dancing in delight. What matchless loveliness is hers? What infinite content pervades the heart when she appears? O brothers, says Prem Das, I humbly beg you, one and all, to sing the mother's praise. Sri Ramakrishna sang and danced, and the devotees danced around him. Not a lovely, lovely moment. Such love of God and love of the Divine Mother. And for us to not forget that. It is wonderful to think on our mothers, and with love and with gratitude for all that they did and gave for us. But how much better it is, even, to think on the Divine Mother. When Master went to see Master Mahasaya, who wrote this Ramakrishna, the Gospel of Ramakrishna, and Master Mahasaya was sitting, and he was conversing with the Divine Mother. He is in this inward ecstatic state, and he was talking to her. And Master, even as a young boy, he felt so ashamed that here was this great saint who was easily conversing with his Divine Mother. And to Yogananda, before he was Yogananda, Divine Mother was non-existent, couldn't be seen, couldn't be heard. And so he asked Master Mahasaya, will you petition the Divine Mother for me so that I may see her with my own eyes? And Master Mahasaya was reluctant to do so, but Master pressed him. And finally he said, all right, I'll ask. Master went home and he meditated in this attic room that he had. When you enter into that attic room, it's just filled with such a powerful vibration. And he meditated for hours and hours and hours, and finally 10 o'clock that night, Divine Mother manifested before him. And he saw her with his own eyes. And she said, "It is I who have loved you through your mother's eyes," whom he was missing very greatly because she had left the body when he was still a boy. "It is I who loved you through your mother's eyes and all the different mothers you have had down through time. And I will love you always." And with that assurance, she disappeared. And he was thrilled. He was in ecstasy, and he spent much of the night up in ecstasy. And finally, the sun started coming up, and he made his way to Master Mahasaya's home, which happened to be the very home where his mother had left the body. That's where Master Mahasaya was living, on 50 Amherst Street. And so he saw that there was a towel there on the door, which he took as a gentle hint not to come in, so he was vacillating. And suddenly the master opened the door, and he came in, and he sat down with Master Mahasaya. And Master was feeling mischievous that morning, and he said, "Master," he said, "did the Divine Mother have a response for me?" Master Mahasaya said, "At 10 o'clock last night, you had your answer. Is there anything that I could add to that?" And he realized that Master Mahasaya knew exactly what had happened. And so then they became the best of friends, you might say. They would go together, and Master Mahasaya on many occasions showed him Divine Mother. And it became a living reality for him. And Papa, too, worshiped God as the Divine Mother. And Master used to say that Mother was closer than the Father. And this is true in the sense that the mother steps in and does for the child what the father sometimes will stand back and not do. So to have this relationship with the Divine Mother, to feel that love, to feel that the mother is ever looking after you, it's a wonderful, wonderful relationship to have. And as Papa traveled all over without any money, without any means of support at all, he felt that Divine Mother was looking after him every step of the way. He felt her presence. He felt her care. And you know, when you open yourself to this kind of relationship, it opens you to the grace. Now, grace is always there for us, but we've shut the door on grace. Our lack of belief, our lack of attunement, our lack of love closes that door to grace. So it is our faith, it is our love, it is our putting our attention upon God in whatever form that draws us closer to Him. You know, for Papa, the name Ram signified all, everything that God was. But when Mother Krishnabai heard that name Ram, it left her cold. It didn't do anything for her. And one day she heard Papa's adult daughter call him Papa. And that just touched her heart. That just thrilled her. And so for her then, God became Papa. So really, it doesn't make any difference what form you focus your attention on when it comes to God. What really matters is that you feel drawn close to Him, and that God becomes something that's tangible, something that's close, not distant, not far away. A divine presence that is always with you, loving you, caring for you, guiding you, providing for you. And when you have that kind of relationship, you see, then you open the door to grace that's always there, and grace begins to flow in. God is always anxious to do for us, but we must give the signal that we are willing recipients. And sometimes we pull on the door and we think we're trying to open the door. I remember one time that I was trying to open the door to God, and I was getting so frustrated because it didn't seem like that door was opening. And I was pulling as hard as I could on that door. And then, much to my own humility, I looked down and I saw that my own foot was pressed up against the door, keeping it closed, even while I was pulling on it. And that's the way we are, you see, because there's some unconscious part of us that is not wanting to open ourselves to that door. And so we have that feeling. We have that desire to know God, and yet we work as our own worst enemy. And if that door of grace is not opening, let us examine ourselves and see where we might be pressing our foot against the door, even while we're pulling with our hands to open it. I have one other story here. It's a very interesting one. It's when Mother was in India in 1957-58. She tells this from a talk that she gave in 1960. Papa was criticized by many people, and still is today by some people, because he left his wife and his child and went in search of God. They didn't have anything to live on, and yet, strangely enough, they were taken care of. He went to every single temple, every single shrine. He did whatever God directed him to do. And he did this because God told him that this was the thing for him to do. And he said that when he came back, his daughter and other children were playing around him, and he felt no difference in his feeling for these other children than he did for his own daughter. And the reason was is that he attained the consciousness of Christ that said, "Let all of the little children come unto me." He didn't see any difference between this child and that child. Merely because we bear a child in our own body doesn't necessarily mean that this, quote, mine is the sense of divine. All are gods, and we must recognize this. I think I've told you before that I had this tremendous experience with my eldest daughter, who was about to have a baby in the United States while I was in India. And while I was listening to Papa, and all of a sudden it seemed as though I saw the whole pattern of the whole universe. And he used Barbara as an example of how it happened, that I had carried her in my bosom, that I had borne her, that she had gone out into the world. And then all of a sudden I felt her drawn back. And then I became conscious of what was happening, and I thought, this can't happen. This is my child. Undoubtedly, she started to have her baby, and something was going to happen to her. I didn't want to lose her. And I started to pray to God, and I went over to my room, and I sat there, and strangely enough, I started to have childbirth pains. And they were terrific. And they were just as though I were bearing the child myself. And I felt everything that she was experiencing. And finally I felt that it was an unnatural birth, and that she was going to be taken out of her body for good. And I felt her heart stop. And I kept saying, "God, Christ, Guru. God, Christ, Guru." And I felt a terrible stab because, as I later found out, the baby had been in breech position. He hadn't been able to give her any of the anesthetic at all. And they had to perform an incision without any anesthetic. And I felt every part of this in this experience I was going through. And finally I kept saying to her, because I remember that Master said, when anyone loses consciousness and is about to die, if you whisper in their ear and talk to them, because the hearing is the last sense of which you are capable of using, if they can hear you, you can speak to them and say, "Make the effort. Make the effort." And if you can get to their consciousness, it sometimes revives the life force, and life comes again into the body. And I kept doing this and praying to God until finally I felt her start to breathe again. And I finally knew she was all right. In the meantime, I sent Father down to Papa to tell him the trouble I was in, because the pain was so great I could scarcely stand it. And Papa was praying too. And when I was all through, then I became very ill in my stomach, very sick to my stomach. And the next 3 days I had afterbirth pain. And in the meantime I heard the doctor say it was a boy. So what did I do but write her a letter on the 17th? This happened on the 14th. I wrote her a letter on the 17th of December and congratulated her on having a son. I wrote of all the experiences that I had. And a little later, I got a cable from her, and she said, "I am very disturbed over your cable. The baby has not arrived yet." You can imagine how she felt after my telling her of all these experiences. And yet, strangely enough, on January 9th, we were in Pondicherry, which was clear across the continent. And that morning, as I lay in a bed in an old-fashioned room where the ceiling was so high it must have been 200 years old, and there's a hook on the ceiling, and Father suggested that maybe it was used with a pulley on it to hang the dresses on women. They used to wear those big flowing bustle dresses so that they could just lower it down over their head. Interesting little side note. And I was there, and without any volition on my part, the last part of what God had started to show me while I was in Papa's room, and I had stopped and had started to have this experience, came to me. And all of a sudden, I became identified with the Divine Mother of the Universe. And I felt Barbara coming back to myself. This was the evolution of the soul, of being born, of going out and coming back. And I realized that even if she died, that she would go no place but back to myself. And I felt at complete peace. And I felt wonderful and uplifted. It was a tremendous experience. And when we got back to the hotel in Madras, Papa had sent a cablegram from Ron, which said that the boy, the baby boy, had been born on January 9th. And he said that he was just elated because the first one was a girl, and he'd wanted a boy. And he said, "Yours in God, Christ Guru," which was terrific, because that's what I had said all of the time to God in an effort to save her life. Then I got a letter from her telling me that she experienced right down to the last detail everything that I experienced that night. Now, how do you account for these things? Isn't this tremendous? It really is. And so when I got back to the ashram after being gone for 20 days, I said to Papa, "Well," I said, "I really had a scare." He said, "You know, you had Ram Dass worried too." We gave him such a sort of a bad time because here all this went on and yet nothing had happened. And of course, Papa had opened the cable to find out what it was, because Papa's insatiable sense of curiosity would not permit him not to do it. Mother laughs. And so here we have a story of a human mother and a divine mother all rolled into one package. And the human mother would not allow her daughter to leave the body and fought for her to stay. The Divine Mother looked at it and saw it is all God, and where does she go except back into me? And felt completely at peace with it all. And this is our dual perspective, the human and the divine. God has us here on this earth for a reason. And sometimes we fight for a life. Perhaps many times we fight for a life. And we do it with everything that God gives to us, because that is God's will acting through us. And the other perspective is, everything is perfect as it is. Perfect as it is. And you're completely at peace with how this world is evolving, because it is all God from beginning to end, and everything in between. So we strive to realize Divine Mother. We strive to live our lives in complete conformity with Him. And if we do this, we honor both Father and Mother. Heavenly Father, Divine Mother. So let us strive to attune ourselves to this highest truth. and know that we have both come to serve, and we are also in perfect peace with all that God does. Will you please pray with me? O Heavenly Father, Divine Mother, I feel the wonder and the beauty of Thy glorious perfection in every part of my being. My heart is bursting with my love for Thee. I kneel in adoration at Thy feet and surrender myself to Thee. I feel the power of Thy perfection surging in every cell of my body. My mind and my intelligence are radiant with Thy healing light. My soul is filled with the ecstasy and bliss of my communion with Thee. I and my Father are one. Blessed Spirit, I am He. Bless. Amen. Pranams, I bow to the light in you.